ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, Text 5, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Nadyaha Samudraha Giriyaha Savanaspati Virudhaha. Should be a dot under that H. The last H? Is it? Okay. Palanti Oshadhayaha Sarvaha Kamam Anvrityu Tasya. No, it's Anvrityu. I can't see very well. By Nadya Samudra Gireyu
Girayaha.
My vision is very strange. Savanaspati Virudhaha Palantyo Shadhaya Sarva Kama Manritu Tasya Vai Nadya Samudra Gireya Savanaspati Virudhaha Palantyo Shadhaya Sarva Kama Manritu Tasya Vai Madhukanta?
Nadya Samudra Gireyaha
Nadya Samudra Gireyaha
Savanaspati Virudhaha
Savanaspati Virudhaha
Palantyo Shadhaya Sarva
Palantyo Shadhaya Sarva
Kama Manritu Tasya Vai
Kama Manritu Tasya Vai Nadya Samudra Gireyaha Savanaspati virudhaha Palantyo shadhaya sarva Kama manritu tasya vai Nadya samudra giraya Savanaspati virudhaha Palanti saushodhya sarva Kama man ritu tasya vai Nadya samudra girayaha Savanaspati virudhaha Palanti saushodhya sarva Kama man ritu tasya vai Nadya samudra girayaha Savanaspati virudhaha Palantyo shadhaya sarva Kama manvritya tasya vai Savanaspati virudhaha Palantyo shodhaya sarva Kama man ritu tasya vai Nadya samudra giraya Savanaspati virudhaha
Palantyo shadhaya sarva
phalantya oshadhaya sarva
kamam
amritutasya vai
nadya samudra giraya
savanaspati virudhaha phalantya oshadhaya sarva kamaman ritu tasya vai. Ladies,
nadya
samudra giraya savanaspati virudha phalantyo shadhaya sarva kamaman ritu tasya vai. You want to sit here? It's cold. Nadyaha. Rivers. Samudraha. Oceans. Giriyaha. Hills and mountains. Savanaspati. Vegetables. Virudhaha. Creepers. Palanti. Active, oshadhayaha, drugs, sarvaha, all, kamam, necessities, anuritu. Oh, I see, that's anuritu. But because ri is a verb, it becomes anuritu. Seasonal. Tasya. For the king. By. Certainly. Vanaspati is often used to mean herbs. Is it not in modern language? Herbs. And oshodhayaha would mean the same thing in this context. The rivers, oceans, hills, mountains, forests, creepers, and active drugs in every season paid their tax quota to the king in profusion. Purport. Since Maharaj Yudhishthira was under the protection of the Ajita, the infallible Lord, as above mentioned, the properties of the Lord, namely the rivers, oceans, hills, forests, etc., were all pleased, and they used to supply their respective quota of taxes to the king. The secret to success is to take refuge under the protection of the Supreme Lord. Without his sanction, nothing can be possible. To make economic development by our own endeavors on the strength of tools and machineries is not all. The sanction of the Supreme Lord must be there, otherwise, despite all instrumental arrangements, everything will be unsuccessful. The ultimate cause of success is the Daiva, the Supreme. Kings like Maharaj Yudhishthira knew perfectly well that the king is the agent of the Supreme Lord to look after the welfare of the mass of people. Actually, the state belongs to the Supreme Lord. The rivers, oceans, forests, hills, drugs, etc. are not creations of man. They are all creations of the Supreme Lord, and the living being is allowed to make use of the property of the Lord for the service of the Lord. Today's slogan is that everything is for the people, and therefore the government is for the people and by the people. But to produce a new species of humanity at the present moment on the basis of God consciousness and perfection of human life, the ideology of godly communism, the world has to again follow in the footsteps of kings like Maharaj Yudhishthira or Parikshit. There is enough of everything by the will of the Lord, and we can make proper use of things to live comfortably without enmity between men, or animal and men, and man or nature. The control of the Lord is everywhere, and if the Lord is pleased, every part of nature will be pleased. The river will flow profusely to fertilize the land. The oceans will supply sufficient quantities of minerals, pearls, and jewels. The forest will supply sufficient wood, drugs, and vegetables. And the seasonal changes will effectively help produce fruits and flowers in profuse quantity. The artificial way of living, depending on factories and tools, can render so-called happiness only to a limited number at the cost of millions. Since the energy of the mass of people is engaged in factory production, the natural products are being hampered, and for this the mass is unhappy. Without being educated properly, the mass of people are following in the footsteps of the vested interests by exploiting natural reserves, and therefore there is acute competition between individual and individual, and nation and nation. There is no control by the trained agent of the Lord. We must look into the defects of modern civilization by comparison here, and should follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Yudhishthir to cleanse man and wipe out anachronisms. Continuing the theme from yesterday, here it's stated how all the different aspects of material nature, they paid their tax quota, that's an interesting way to put it, to the king Yudhishthir, because King Yudhishthir was very pious, so the earth and all her attendant aspects, they all gave their natural products for the material benefit of mankind. And mankind is supposed to be grateful for that. The beginning of that is to at least appreciate that this is being given by a higher power. People, they may not know who that higher power is, or they may identify the higher power, that there are different gods without understanding there's a supreme God. But that's a beginning of God consciousness, to recognize there is a higher power or powers, and that we are dependent on them, and they are kindly giving all these things, and there's a sense of gratefulness and to these who are our benefactors. And there is the ultimate benefactor. Without beginning to recognize that, then what are we left with? Ahara nidra bhaya maitun. This ahara bhaya, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, we're able to do that by the grace of higher powers. To eat, we need food. The food is given by the earth, by the cows, the rivers and oceans. They give their water and gems from the oceans, pearls. Nowadays they're taking out oil, which is not such a good idea. And people take fish also from the oceans and rivers. That's also a natural product. That's not for very high-class people, but it's also given. It's not made in factories. So a sense of gratefulness should be there. Otherwise, we're just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending without any higher sense of knowledge or religion. And then we just become just like animals, who also eat, sleep, mate, and defend without any sense of gratefulness to the higher powers and the highest power who has given all this. So without that sense, then we become just like animal. And then the further and further we get away from living on the lap of nature, the more animalistic we become. And we become very gross, and we see in modern life. Animals don't have wars, and that's not just in modern life. They may fight individually among themselves. Usually that's only for a male over a female, or for some scraps of food. Dogs may fight, but they don't have whole-scale wars. And the animals only take what they need, not more. They may, just like a bear hibernates, so they may stock up some food, or the bees stock up some honey. But they don't imbalance the whole ecosystem out of a immense sense of greed and exploitation. So, there's all this talk about ego. It's everywhere. Someone's diary says ego. Is that your diary? What does it say on the cover?
Care for earth.
Stay green.
Okay. Save green.
Something green, anyway.
Save green.
Care for earth. So there's this whole idea of being ecological, ecologically minded. Save the earth. Use these kind of bulbs instead of the old ones because they consume less electricity. Of course, they're still consuming electricity, so which is produced by non-eco-friendly methods. This idea of we should be ecologically aware, but to fully understand nature, we have to understand, as Srila Prabhupada often say, whose nature is it? It's Krishna's nature, maya dhakshena prakriti. It's all going on under his supervision. Suyate sacharacharam. Everything, moving and non-moving, comes into being under his supervision. So without recognizing the Supreme Lord, or at least the demigods, or at least that there is life, and we should not take life any more than we need to do so, then we become more and more, we say animalistic, but actually the animals in many ways are better than humans, because the animals don't have wars, they don't do pogroms on other species, just like the white man went to America where they call them red Indians, or what the inhabitants before the white man went to America, the mongoloid types of men who were living there, they'd lived there for who knows how many generations. And there were bison and buffaloes wandering the plains. There were millions of passenger pigeons. But the white man, just for fun, killed them all. So they're all, the bison is extinct. The passenger pigeon, there were literally millions of them, and they just shot them for fun and killed them. And the bison also, there's hundreds of thousands wandering around. Bison is something like a cow, but the white man just shot them for fun till they're all dead. And they say, the white man, very civilized. You have to be like the white man, and then you're really civilized. But they thought that they had to civilize other people. Their idea of civilization is worse than animals, totally based on exploitation of natural resources and exploitation of other humans. All based on one of the first statements in the Bible, that God gave man dominion over all the animals. But here the idea is given that Yudhishthira Maharaj, to give dominion means he made him the king. Here the idea is that the king should be protecting the citizens and looking for their welfare. But they interpreted it to mean that, okay, God made us the king, so what does the king do? He just kills them and exploits them, and that was their idea. So even though they have some kind of religion, they don't have any... The way it's been interpreted has led to a a kind of society that is highly exploitive and godless. This in the ecological movement, at one point in America, they wanted to promote that. You see, it's a Christianity. Even people stopped being Christians and they became atheists, but the same mentality continues. And they wanted some of these ecological minded ideologists. They said, "Hey, it's all coming from Christianity," but then they, which is a fact. It said better to be a Buddhist or a Hindu or an atheist. But then they stopped that line because they realized it would be so unpopular, at least in America, that they thought it would act for political reasons. They stopped. But it's a fact that their misinterpretation of God's desire, even though they're religious, their misinterpretation of God's desire has led to a very... of course, that's a simplistic way of looking at it, but it's definitely a major factor in the exploitive society that we take nature as something. Then in science came the idea, nature is something for us to control by science. And then man becomes just brute. And the idea, the white man is the best man, so if the non-white man doesn't do what the white man wants him to do, then the non-white man just be killed. That's all. That's how they justified. There was the killing literally millions of the original inhabitants of America, both North and South. They're not civilized. So they're just like animals. And what do we do to animals? We kill them. Not dogs, of course. I remember seeing a news headline, very, in Japan they're killing dogs, terrible, very bad. And they're killing millions of, this is in England, and they're killing millions of cows every day. So, because they have no Atma Gyan, and they have no knowledge of the Supreme Lord and our position in relationship to Him and material nature, because we don't have knowledge of this, therefore this exploitive society has arisen, in which there's no sense of gratefulness to God or to nature. Just it's seen as something to exploit. So the ecological movement, we can tell them, if you really want to make a change, it's not going to come by changing your light bulbs from one kind of light bulb to another and doing things like that. It needs a massive change in consciousness. They're aware of that we should go from exploitive to non-exploitive. Well, their idea is to say less exploitive, because they still want to have all the conveniences of modern life. Therefore, they talk of green energy or bioenergy and all this. But for that bioenergy, then they're growing corn to convert into alcohol to run their kind. To grow corn in a massive way also requires unnatural farming techniques. They have no idea. So, what's the idea? The idea is what Srila Prabhupada gave. Just live simply. Srila Prabhupada, he told one of his disciples, "You write a book how Krishna consciousness can solve all the problems of the world." And he said, I'll tell you what to write. So you just tell me what the problems are and I'll tell you how to solve them. Can anyone be so confident? Whatever the problem is, actually, Prabhupada knew, like economic problems. Well, what's the economic problems? We don't have enough money. Okay, well, stop money. Then you won't have any lack of money, because there won't be any money to have a lack of. use real valuable. Nataji, you can sit on the chair if you like, on the sofa. Have this paper money, and now there's imaginary money. Most of the transactions, most of the big money transactions, it's all just in computers. It's not just imaginary money. Gold, go back to gold. Gold, silver, things which are actually valuable for transactions. And transactions, not much needed, actually. The massive international trade, just it's nonsense. Not required. Produce everything locally. That's what you need. Petrol problem? Stop using petrol. That's all. You don't need it. To solve your ahara nidra bhayamaitun problem, you don't need. You made it a problem. The animals don't have any problem. See, the man gets up in the morning, rushes off to work. Dog gets up whenever he likes, stretches himself. Not in any anxiety. The birds get up, and the first thing they do in the morning is start singing. They don't know where their food's going to come from. But they don't have any anxiety. So gratitude, that's a beginning, recognizing that all these things are given by God, even if we don't have a very, very developed idea of God consciousness, and everything is given by God, then everything is God's gift, and everything belongs to God, so it's not for me to exploit. I am part of the, even if I identify myself as my body, then I am part of the whole ecosystem, and my duty is to act within that ecosystem. And then just like the birds and the beasts, they get their food, then I'll get. So acting according to one's position, not desiring to exploit, with gratefulness that God has given us all these gifts so that we can live peacefully without anxiety. This is the beginning of God consciousness. There's no spiritual realization without this, and therefore all this talk of different religions and interfaith and all this, but people are living a highly exploitive life. To live in modern society means to live a life which goes against nature, which means to go against our own nature also. And so it's contradictory. And in the subtle consciousness also, that will affect our consciousness. And those of you who have gone to live on the land, you can perceive that, how even subtly your consciousness changes as you go from the city to simple life living on the lap of nature. How the consciousness, even apart from the cleansing of the conscious that goes on by chanting Hare Krishna and performing the hearing and chanting about Krishna, but the whole outlook changes. But when you're in the city, then you have to see everyone. Who are they? What are they? It's subtly there. What are they out to get? They're in my way. We don't see people. We just see some bodies. There are too many bodies that we can't relate with all of them, so we just don't bother with them. And you can't trust them. In a city, if someone is lying on the ground groaning, apparently in pain, most people won't touch him because they're afraid he's just pretending, and he'll grab you and put a knife at your throat and take your money. That happened recently in Mumbai. Madhav was driving, and some looked like a woman. It was actually a hijra, he found out. waved him down. So he thought, oh, it's a woman in distress. So he stopped. The door, side door was open. She opened the door, got in, put a knife at his throat and said, give me all your money. So this kind of thing happens in the city. So people don't want to help others because they're afraid that they're not actually in need of help. Or they think, anyway, let the ambulance come. And it's not. I'm busy. I got to look after my own life. So you can't trust anyone. But in small communities, if someone misbehaves, then everyone knows about it, and everyone will react with them in such a way that they don't like. They can't get away with it. And because people don't like to be thought badly of by others, that's also another major impetus to act properly. And also, there's, you know, what are you going to steal when everyone's living at the same level, and you can't, where are you going to hide it? What are you going to do with anything that you steal anyway? So in many ways, just the way of life, the consciousness and the way of interacting with others, there's automatic, because you know how people behave, so automatically you trust them, or if they may have a somewhat crooked nature, again, they can't, it's not likely to develop in a small community. You just can't get away with, you can't get away with cheating others or subtly manipulate. Maybe you could get away with subtly manipulating them. We have to be careful about that, that someone controls others and psychopathic type or something like the dictatorial type. Therefore, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is required, how Yudhishthira Maharaj ruled as a servant of Krishna. We're all servants of Krishna. We're all here to serve each other, not to dominate or exploit others. So Daivivanashram, we want to establish this society as a means to facilitate our Krishna conscious living. In so many ways, it's advantageous, the living simply. Of course, for Kshatriyas, their way, for Kshatriyas more than anyone else, their way of life may not be very simple because they have to deal with so many people, and how people may live in the country, but it's not that they're automatically fully saintly, even if they're trying to be saintly. We find in our Krishna conscious society that most of the people who come to it are trying to be saintly, but still it's just the way human nature is, especially in Kali Yuga, and we have our previous baggage. That's a word that's come to be used to mean our conditioning. And so it can be difficult to adjust everyone's desires and their likes and dislikes. And the king, he has to judge, make judgments when there are disputes. He is always to be aware that he may be under threat from his ministers or others who may want to, or from rival kings. Of course, in the Vedic system, the king, the administrative rulers are Kshatriyas, and their advisors or ministers are Brahmanas, and Brahmanas don't want to, they're trained in a way that they don't want to take up the kingship. They think that's below their dignity. It's a lower position. So there won't be so much intrigues. Although we find in the case of Chanakya, he conspired to get this Nanda out, but not to put himself in position, to put a good Kshatriya in position. So a good Kshatriya shouldn't have to worry, but too much at least. He should be safe in his position. So this is by discussing all these things, we can understand the psychology how it all works. It's very difficult for people to understand Varnashram because they can't get out of the consciousness of exploitation, and they think, oh, someone's put higher than others. That means they're trying to, they want to exploit them. But no, it's not like that at all. Especially with Vaishnava Varnashram, then everyone, the whole basis of Vaishnavism is to imbibe the mood of being a servant of Krishna and a servant of the Vaishnavas. So, Varnashram, it requires a lot of explaining to others, but even with explaining the concept, then we have to demonstrate it, and then people have to live it, and then gradually people can come to appreciate the value of that. At least among our devotees, most of them who see our communities there, because hopefully they've read or heard something about this, that Prabhupada wanted to establish this, and they can appreciate this. Hindus and Jains in India will appreciate cow protection, and Buddhists also, actually. They'll appreciate that endeavor. If they don't appreciate anything else, they'll appreciate there's cow protection. Of course, by no means does ISKCON have anything like a monopoly on cow protection, as it has in the West. In the West, ISKCON is the only society which is doing anything about cow protection. We're not doing much. It's a very, very foreign idea in the Western world. Sorry for using so many anecdotes from my childhood. Here's another one. I remember seeing an advertisement for a charity called Oxfam in the newspaper. They were talking about give to us to help relieve the famine in Bihar. Later, when I went to Bihar, I asked people about the famine. They said, what famine? We never had a famine. But they were advertising and collecting so much money. And they showed a photo of an old man with just his bones and skin showing, and a cow next to him. And they said, you see, we're not just feeding people, but we're training them. And you see, these stupid people, they're starving and they don't kill the cows. They should go, well, they're stupid. So we're educating them so they don't starve. They can kill the cows. Hey, old man, you know, when he's so old and he's ready to die and he's not eating, then he'll become all skin and bones like that. But their idea, they're protecting the cow? They have a saying in English, holy cow, which means, what does it mean exactly? It's an analogous, a metaphor, I guess you could say. No, not a metaphor. It's an analogy. The idea of something which is people hold to be sacred or very important, or something that is unquestionable. Although if someone would actually question it, they could see that it's stupid to question it. Something like that. Questioning the Queen of England's morality or something like that. The Queen is a prostitute. I think Prabhupada said that. Something like that. That's not a very good example. It's something that's very... Anyway, look it up on the internet. You don't have the internet at the farms. Okay. So... With this reverence for life and gratefulness, then we want the tendency to kill animals for food or even to kill plants for food. Because we don't kill more than we need. People say, well, even you see, you say not to, you're vegetarian, but you're also killing vegetable life. But actually, we harvest the grain after the grain has naturally died. Fruit we take from trees doesn't kill the tree. There are some things. If you want to eat potatoes, then you have to pull up the whole plant. Therefore, Jains don't eat potatoes. They don't want to kill the plants. What do they eat? Of course, they also use oil, which is drilled from under the earth. They go in motor cars. So if they want to be real Jains, they stop eating potatoes. Don't eat potatoes and don't drive in motor cars. But anyway, the idea is, although we can't avoid some violence in this world, to minimize it. And understand that, after all, God has given us vegetables and fruit and various things, and we can utilize that, but we should offer it to Krishna, not just take it. And don't take more than needed. Don't waste food. That was all over the world, that was a standard understanding that children are taught from the beginning of life. Srila Prabhupada said that when he was a child, if they saw a grain of rice on the floor, cooked rice, they'd pick it up, touch it to their head, and take it. That was standard everywhere. Don't waste food. But in the modern Western world, and increasingly that will be there in India, they have restaurants, and they cook more than they need, and then they just throw it out at the end of the day. Or they give coffee in a huge cup, which is more than people can drink, and they just throw half of it away. People are used to throwing food away. It's the amount of food that's thrown away in America alone could feed all the hungry people of the world, something like that. It's a huge amount of food. And then they have food in packages, and they say there's an expiry date. And so much, then they just throw it out after it's expired. And you're not even allowed to give it away because it's expired, it's considered unsafe. Huge, tons and tons of food. What to speak of when there's a good crop, say of corn or soya beans, and it's too much because it means the price will go down too much, so it's not profitable to trade in it. So they burn it or throw it in the ocean, just to keep the prices up. Demoniac. The whole thing is demoniac. So if we take a simple diet that won't cause any harm to any living being, except maybe the potatoes, but they also get benefited by offering to Krishna. By taking a sattvic diet, that immediately helps with our spiritual realization. Taking healthy food helps to keep the body healthy, whereas if we eat, even if we take vegetarian food, you get this atta in a packet, and who knows how old it is, and it's all mixed up with chemicals and this and that, and it's not very, actually very healthy for the body. The proper system, as you probably know, and you probably do this, is that you grind every day that much atta that you need for each family. It's ground just before it's cooked, that's all. And there's a great difference in the flavor and the nutrition between that grain which is ground and then made into dough and then cooked. There's a huge difference between that and that which you buy in a packet. It's like a different kind of thing altogether. It's so much more tasty and nourishing. So we need good nourishment also for spiritual realization. If our brain is dull, it may be vegetarian food we're eating, but it may be tamasic, something which is ground up and put in a packet and send it away. So it's already old. The pran has gone out of it. The flavor has gone out of it. The nutrition has gone out of it. It's tamasic. Of course, it's not as tamasic as eating meat, but that atta is—it's the very fact that it's all old. Old means anything older than just grinding it and using it. It means it's already too old. Now, if you have it from one day before, then it's you shouldn't use it. Let's see if my, oh, I got it. The watch is right here. So I presume you all know all these things. I hope so. It's not all news for you. But anyway, we should discuss these things regularly and for others also. Now, as a whole society, we have a worldwide society, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, of people who are practicing Krishna consciousness. But one major area that Srila Prabhupada wanted our society to take up, of course, 50% Varnashram, which he wanted to begin by establishing farm communities. We have not, in these 50 years of ISKCON, after Srila Prabhupada left, we haven't taken that up very seriously so far. And most of our devotees live in the cities. It's very unnatural, a way of life full of Rajaguna and Tamaguna. And apart from all the many, many disadvantages of that for becoming Krishna conscious, one thing is that we're cut off from our natural mothers, the earth and the cow. We don't have that connection. Without drinking milk, then Srila Prabhupada said this is liquid religion. So without drinking milk, then the finer tissues, the sentiments, the spiritual sentiments, they won't arise. Of course you say, well, we drink milk, but the stuff you get in a packet, that's not... I mean, there might be something resembling milk in it. But it's very different to the cow who we love and protect, and she loves us just like a mother and gives milk with affection. She likes to give. Yesterday we read Kamang Vavarsha Parajanya. Sarva Kamudugha Mahi. What is the next line? Sisichur Smagama. How the cow, they wetted the pasturing grounds with their milk. They're so content. They like to give milk. It's described how Mother Yashoda, just seeing Krishna, then milk would automatically come in her breast out of affection. So the cow, the milk that she gives with love, that's going to be mixed with her love. Whereas that you extract by force with a machine from a cow who has known only fear from the beginning of her life, who is grossly mistreated throughout her life. If she gives birth to a male child, that calf will be taken away from her immediately and sent for slaughter. The poor cow, her natural propensity is to love the humans, not only her own calves, but also the humans who look after her. But she's mistreated, and there's no love in the whole process. It's the people look after her, they have no love in their hearts. They're monsters who they can even think of killing or mistreating this animal. They just think it's normal. They just think it's completely normal. That means it's highly demoniac society, and we're part of that. If we're living in the cities and we don't see the cow, we don't serve the cow, serving the cow, of course, there's, apart from feeding, there's brushing and petting, and that gives us a connection with our mother, the cow. And some of our devotees in the Western world, they're becoming vegans, which means they don't drink milk at all. Because the vegans are people who say we shouldn't take any dairy products because the animals are so much exploited. And some of our devotees are becoming vegans because they think, yeah, it's right, we shouldn't take milk from animals who are being so mistreated. But that's not the solution. We should take milk from protected cows. Some vegans say even if you protect the cows, still you shouldn't take, because they say it's bad for health. There's a lot of propaganda that milk is bad for health, and actually scientists have discovered fairly recently that there are different kinds of cows which give milk with different properties. And most of the Western breeds give milk that is actually not very digestible by humans. Whereas some breeds in the West and all of the traditional breeds in India, they give milk that is almost chemically, it's almost exactly the same structure as that of human milk. So it's very digestible by humans. And the vegans, they also say that, well, you see, the cows should just be allowed to run wild, and why do you want to control them? But we see the cows are very happy if they're looked after. And if you leave them just to wander around, then wild, other wild animals can attack them. And anyway, it's a fact that they are very happy. And they say, well, you see, we evolved differently, and now in the beginning, humans didn't control animals, so we should go back to the... But that's all nonsense, because in the beginning there was Krishna, who looks after cows. This evolutionary theory is just a bunch of nonsense. So we shouldn't become vegans. We need milk. It is required. We need ghee. We read Srila Prabhupada writes about the wonderful qualities of milk for nourishing the brain. That means real milk from cows who are loved, and it won't have the same effect if cows are mistreated. And the ghee is also most valuable food. It's a medicine in itself, just to take real ghee. But for that you have to have real milk from real cow, really loved cows. Otherwise it won't have the same effect. And properly fed also. Properly fed means the best feeding for them is grazing. And then they can pick up all kinds of... They don't just take grass, but they take all kinds of herbs and like this. And Srila Prabhupada often writes about how the cow, what an amazing animal. She eats grass, which is of no value to us. And she gives the most valuable food. So there's no way that we can do that. We may think, let's do it in the laboratory. Then we won't need cows. You can just put in grass at one side and take milk out the other. But the scientists aren't going to do it. And even if they did, anyway, they're not. So, but it wouldn't be with love. Just like one reporter asked Prabhupada, well, you're saying that they can't go to the moon. This was before they so-called went to the moon. What happens if they do go to the moon? Won't that mean that your disciples will lose faith in you? And Prabhupada said, well, they're not going to go to the moon, so there's no question of it. He said, but no, Swamiji, you see, it's already, they're within a few months, they're going to go to the moon. Prabhupada said, no, they're not. So he kept on saying, but what happens if they go to the moon? But they're not going to go, so there's no meaning to the question. So what if the scientists could produce a milk machine that you put in grass at one side, but they're not going to do it. But even if they could do it, there wouldn't be the love of the cow there. So we're doing pretty good. I'm going through... Got through three paragraphs already. That's why we see Shukdev and others, rishis, they would live on milk alone. A little milk like that can, of course, the rishis, they don't need much food, but a little milk can give you so much energy. They were very, for the rishis, that was very important. They can take milk, which will, Prabhupada said, that helps in spiritual realization to take that food. And it helps very much to make us sattvic. So the mind becomes purified. Simply liquid religion, liquid religiosity by taking this milk. And then there, of course, there's a difference between milk. cow's milk and sheep's milk or buffalo's milk or donkey's milk or pig's milk or different kinds of milk. Milk in Shastra, including Ayurveda, unless it's otherwise stated, means cow's milk. In some Ayurvedic prescriptions, they may call for something else. Donkey's milk is said to be very good for some conditions. Here in India, donkey's milk sells at a high price because it has supposed to have some therapeutic effect, but that's not meant for daily consumption. Camel's milk also in Rajasthan, sometimes they take. But milk means cow's milk, which is nourishing, and her love comes in that also. Just like we take Krishna Prasad. What's the difference between Krishna Prasad? You take chapatis in a restaurant, it's some on roadside dhaba, and you take Krishna Prasad. What's the difference? If you analyze chemically, it looks all the same, but there's a great difference. It's Krishna's love is there. And the love of the devotee who has cooked that with his love for Krishna. So that's, you can't chemically analyze that. But there's Krishna's love is there. The cow's love is there to help us. And then the bull. And when we say cow protection, of course that means the bull also. The bull is needed for plowing the land. Krishi means agriculture. The cow is Goraksha specifically, but the bull helps with plowing the land and all transportation. Transport, that means if we have to, we harvest the grains and then we have to move them into storage, then the bull pulls the cart on which we put the grains. Or if we have to, if a family has to go a long distance to visit a relations, something like this, then they may go by bull cart. So in this way, the bull plows the fields in a manner that doesn't disturb the soil in such a way that the tractor compacts the soil. So the natural interaction of small little creatures and organisms and of course earthworms that can't take place in that compacted soil. So the tractor also, apart from all the chemicals and then the oil which spills out of the tractor onto the earth and in so many ways damages the earth, but the bull, when he's plodding along slowly, because some bulls can run very fast and some of them, they plow very quickly also. It requires a very expert plowman to control them. Not in this area. Where is that? In Gujarat, those Kankraj, they go very quickly. Who was telling me about that recently? The bulls, they're so energetic, they plow very quickly. You need someone very expert to control them. But if they have some spill out, that's good for the soil. Their urine and stool comes out and actually nourishes the soil. So he's nourishing the soil as he goes along. Okay, I'll finish there. Any question about this? Actually, there's so many things to discuss. That's why we're having these meetings regularly about establishing our farm communities, Varnashram, Gurukul. So many things to discuss. I was very happy with the meeting yesterday because we'd had many meetings, many discussions, and we decided on course of action, and we're getting reports back how these policies are being implemented and they're working. So it's very productive, actually, these talks. It's not just all theoretical, but it's very practical how we're coming together and sharing our experiences and research. And So it's very, very helpful, actually. Hare Krishna! Srila Prabhupada ki jai! Meeting at 11:30, maybe a little earlier, depends. Stand by and be ready.
So by 11:00 we'll be dinner.
So you can call that
and prasadam
miracle mother cup.
Prasadam is prepared.
If anyone, there's no rule that you have to fast all the time. So if you want, you can take some fruit. Children, of course, should have lactating mothers.
Prasadam will be ready by 9:30 there. So, children can take
prasadam. Yeah, anyone who wants should be able to take.
But there is no room for fasting.
Oh, actually, Gorkishore. No, we don't fast for Gorkishore disappearance. There's no rule that you have to.